Yeah, Rob Davies, the guy with the brown jacket with the chip.
Doesn't look like much, eh? No, it's not much. It's mainly just figures. Yeah, it's always figures.
Person hubs, no? That's a PNC guy there.
Yeah,
that guy is PNC. I can see Mufashle there. Next to him. I can know who's next to him. The guy next to him.
The guy next to him.
Is it? No. Babaza? I can't see all this thing so little.
Yeah.
Ach, I'll get the names.
Okay.
Your thing is outdated. Yeah. The DM members is totally new members.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to get that. They must update it at the PMG.
I do think that we need to make a start. The rest of the members will join us from their various moves, etc. But perhaps what we can do at this point, with four of us here, the only reason why some of us are a little bit spread around is because it makes life easier, you know, in terms of myself and others who have a couple of medical issues at the moment. But we would like to welcome all members of DTI, including the DG and his team. Perhaps I should have first of all said, of course, the Minister of Trade and Industry, Dr. Rob Davies. And I may be, I hope I'm not inaccurate when I say an official welcome to the new Deputy Chair, Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry. It is better because the point is when one has seen someone around in this room, even though it's as chair, you get the impression you have already welcomed them. So certainly you're very welcome, and we feel that you certainly are able to address your portfolio on the run, as it were, having been there before. Now, members, and I want to thank you in particular because, as you know, we had to call for this meeting at the 11th hour, and many of you were occupied, and certainly many of you are still occupied and have asked if you could just leave earlier due to prior engagements, and that certainly is understood. So we appreciate that you're here to start off with. The purpose of the meeting is really to look at two issues, which is an unusual situation for us. Indeed, the Burr caught us a little bit on the hop with so many pieces of legislation on our plate and other reports, but we do need to put some more work in on this as a committee, close off from our side any issues with respect to the adjustments in terms of perhaps underspending, overspending, and then on the other hand, perhaps more specifically, the intention of Brewer was to address the medium-term budget policy statement going forward so that having examined the annual report in detail, we would have had a thorough understanding of the department and our engagement with them during the year in order to be making recommendations when we saw the forward planning, as it were. The reality is we really are simply phasing in this process, and we need to all accept that and understand that. And I think the Ministry and the Department also have that understanding that from our side, that's how we are approaching the matter. So this is probably one of those rare occasions when we assume you did a lot of homework on the annual reports, because as you know, we didn't deal with the entities we had hoped to deal with, and that you're thoroughly familiar with all the adjustments and read the MTBPS from cover to cover. As we then asked the minister and his team, the DG and the team, if it was possible to brief us on the critical aspects. We all know there's an Auditor General's report that comes in with the annual report. We all know about the adjustments, a piece of legislation closing things off. Certain critical issues there can be addressed. And if we can move on to the forward planning, looking at, in particular, the focus that this committee has prioritized, the Industrial Policy Action Plan, trade itself, the regulatory issues, SQAM, as some of us are calling it, but also the small and medium enterprises, particular co-ops, and other issues like that. So having spent a lot of time opening, making sure that we do have quite a few of you here, Minister, it's over to yourself. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks, Chair.
I think I want to start by saying that I think this process, as we seem to call it, is actually quite useful because it is bringing our attention to matters which we might otherwise not focus on so much, at least myself. So the issue that we're coming to talk to you about is whether we are going to underspend on a significant scale or not, and I think that's the issue which I'm going to ask the DG to take us through a detailed presentation on. And I think we should just say that we have a record of which is very, very important to us, where we actually do, broadly speaking, spend our budget. We don't have huge differences in huge underspendings, and it's a record that I think we want to keep. There are some specific explanations for expenditure trends to date, and there's some projections for the last two quarters, but I think we'll have to watch and monitor this space. We do expect, broadly speaking, to be able to come out at the end of the financial year in the same position where we've been every other time of broadly spending our budget, but we do have some challenges. I think the details of those are perhaps where this afternoon's meeting is going to take us. So let me ask the DG to take us through the presentation and then we can engage on it. Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. I thought, as the Minister has already indicated, it would be good to locate this against the background of what the spending behavior of the department has been. And you recall last week when we were doing annual report, I did show the slide which indicates that we do spend budgetary allocation, and in recent years, in fact, that under expenditure to the extent that there is has been kept to the minimum, and the usual factors of accounts to any under expenditure that we've experienced up so far, because of factors that are not within our control necessarily. I would shoot straight to the areas of challenge that account for the under expenditure that we've seen. I should have said, if I go back to the next slide, that we've done a calculation of the actual expenditure against the actual drawings from the Treasury, and we are sitting at 5% of the variance, so 5%. Of under expenditure for the period up to end of October. The factors that account for that, and if one were to look at the big items, would be the automotive investment scheme, which is part of our automotive support program, which as a result of the prolonged consultations that we had to undertake with the industry, resulted in our timelines for launching this being extended to May, as opposed to sometime last year. We were supposed to have done this already by the last financial year, but it overextended into this financial year, with the result that the start date for qualifying investments is only this year in July, beginning of July. But so far, since that time, 39 entities with 53 projects have submitted applications, which applications will be adjudicated
during December. And we expect that about 550 million rand will be disbursed between the period between now or well, between December, when adjudication is done, and end of the financial year in March. The other area is the film incentive. Now, the reason for an expenditure here are twofold. Firstly, is the general economic climate, which is subdued, as it were. We've seen that when we spoke last week, I had said that that problem manifests itself more in this year than in the previous year. And we've seen that the incentives which are showing a flow to take up compared to previous periods. That's the one factor. The other factor, of course, is that for those productions that have already been approved, there was delayed shooting as a result of the activities around the World Cup. Remember, this scheme supports productions in South Africa on location. The impact of the recession is also manifesting itself in a number of incentives which are listed there, the support program for industrial innovation, as well as the IDZ, focusing on both Kuha and Richards Bay, and the BPO sector, where we know that the result of the downturn in the UK, which is our largest market for BPO, the applications are not coming as anticipated. Then there's the small, medium, and development program, which is not taking applications anymore because we are phasing this incentive out. It's been replaced by the next one in line, the enterprise investment program. And so again, there we're seeing slower than expected take up of the incentive. We have, in regard to the EIP, try to adjust the period in which the claims are submitted and when they are paid. Typically, there's a lag between the claim and the period. So there's some adjustment there, which also contributed to the slow take up. And then, of course, our national pavilions, where the funds are typically dispersed in the last quarter of the financial year. Foreign emission accounts refers to expenditure which we incur abroad, whereby the Department of International Relations and Cooperation provide us with administrative support to take care of the expenses that we incur abroad. Now, there's a delay between the invoices and vouchers that are sent from that department to ourselves. It's typically a 2-month delay. However, to deal with that problem, because it's a perennial challenge in our financial accounting, we have an MOU which allows us to pay in advance and to reconcile the vouchers when they are paid. The next area is with regard to compensation of employees. We did speak about our vacancies last week when we were here, and I indicated that the baseline vacancy is 6%, 17.9% reflects the new posts that have been created, some of which are not all of them are budgeted for, but some of which are budgeted for. Hence, there's some amount of under expenditure on this item, as well as the delay in the payment of the inflation-linked salary adjustments as a result of the settlement in the public sector, which will only be paid in the course of this month. Those are the major sectors accounting for the under expenditure. Here we show expenditure to date up to the end of October. You'll see in just a matter of 3 months from July, where expenditure was 1.6 billion, jumped to 2.7 billion end of October, driven really largely by which are the major cost drivers of our budget, incentives, transfers to agencies, as well as an incentive. All right. If I move on, this graph compares our projections, which is the top blue line, as well as the actual expenditure and actual drawings from the treasury, which is the red line. We try to only draw down money from the treasury when we are confident that it will be expanded, and you'll see that the green and red lines are very close together, as it were, and that's really the kind of financial management discipline that we've introduced in the department, and this allows us to prevent large funds which are not spent, as it were. But I think the overall message of the graph is that we are under spending relative to our projections to date so far. This is just a detail of the graph I've just shown with the data there indicating that by end of June, July, the variance, percentage variance was 7%, and percentage budget at that time was 73%, let's say 74%. End of October, this has been reduced to 5.14%, and the available budget is 55%. We reflect on the future with a bit of targets. This is based on the information that we have currently and our expectations going forward. Obviously, the future always presents uncertainty, but there are a number of aspects that we think will support much stronger expenditure going forward. The actual claims, which I've referred to earlier, as well as the environment, the general economic environment, which will affect how the expenditure turns out going forward. But that's an indication of the large items which we know are certainly in the pipeline, for expenditure. The automotive sector, which I referred to, infrastructure, really the transfers to the IDZ, the SMDP program, which I also referred to, as well as the range of smaller items, including the our support for our international activities through the export marketing and investment assistance scheme, a project around aerospace, as well as transfers to TISA and the ABS. That would conclude the presentation, Chair. I'm happy to take any questions.
Right. Thank you, DG Matona. Members, this is just, as I said, highlighting some of the points. Now, if you have any questions just in that area, I think one of the things that this was looking at was, look, this is what has been expended, this is the adjustment here, or certain points have been made here. But this is your opportunity just to seek a clarification at this particular point in time. Yes, I'm looking around to see if there are two or three, and I'll take some. I'll take Honourable Harris, Honourable Khadebe, and Honourable Smala. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I hope it's appropriate for me to refer to the actual budget, if you're prepared to speak.
speak to that.
Sorry, I was just being alerted to someone I haven't seen because of my reading glass has been on. So I apologize to you, Honourable Harris, I didn't hear you.
Sure, I was just saying that I'm going to be speaking to the actual adjusted estimate budget, is that fine? Okay, rather than the presentation, although some of the issues were covered. The first one is the key performance indicators for Cooker, where Chair, this is on page 332 of the actual budget, where we see that there was zero new investors and zero new investments, and yet the jobs target seems to be almost half of what it was meant to be. So I'm just interested in how we managed to create more jobs without more investments. The only possible option is that the existing investments were taking on additional employees, but it seems unlikely given the fact that the economy was so suppressed. So I'd just like an explanation there. The fourth section down on the table on page 332. Then the overall change to the budget is 44 million, Chair. The majority of that, or two-thirds of it, appears to be the Nsimbi National Tooling Initiative, where we rolled over around 30 million rand from last year. I understand this initiative is meant to, over the next 5 years, dramatically scale up the number of people that it's training. I'm interested in how we can be so optimistic about a program looking forward over 5 years when it was unable to spend 30 million rand last year. If you could explain the apparent contradiction there, or possible contradiction. It's a note, it's most clearly referred to in a note on page 338, which explains the rollovers of 29.4 million. Sort of one third of the way down the page. And Chair, as I say, that represents about two thirds of the actual adjustments in the budget. I thought the presentation covered the reasons why there was a reduction on the enterprise aspect of the budget and the business process outsourcing, and clearly the economy meant there was a slower take-up of those incentives. But what you see on page 340, Chair, is that by the looks of things in quarter two, that money was shifted from those programs into Kuka and the other IDZs to the amount of over 400 million. I'm interested in how those IDZs could absorb that 400 million. What was spent on in the IDZs, and were they able to suddenly deal with this boost of cash in the middle of quarter two? That's it, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Harris. Honourable Khadebe.
Just again, I'm looking at this presentation which is in front of us here. As the DGS, I mean that the ethics what they were critics, they are 85% below the budget fiscal expenditure rate. Now, the question is, how are they going to ensure that they reach this optimal level? Because they've shown the troubling situation that's like the student incentives which was supposed to be given out. Is that because of the World Cup there was a decline? How are they going to ensure that they recover because of the activities of the World Cup? And number two, the issue of the compensation to employees. You said that the baseline is the issue of vacancy rate is 6%, but the 17.9 is the issue of the new post. When are those new posts going to be filled? Are we going to be sure that by the end of the year those posts are filled up so that we can use this budget maximum? And then when coming to those issue of course again, last year the president made a call of balance tightening. All the departments were supposed to save as much as possible. How did that policy affect you as a department? Where did you save? Where are you going to save? And how does it affect you moving forward? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable David. Honourable
Smalley.
Thank you very much, Honourable Harris.
Thank you, Chair. I just need to understand that the transfer to agencies, the increase of that to 60%, are we up to date on the budget on there, or what is the effect maybe on that due to maybe a late process on the various agencies that we assist there? I just try to understand, are we on target or not on there? The effect of the vouchers. Chair, yes. I said the transfers of the agencies, it's on your slide 7. Talks to your slide 7, the transfer of up to 60%. And your slide, although at the bottom slide, I can indicate if you are on budget target, but I'm not, maybe with a few percentages off. But I cannot make out if you're actually on target, passing on any monies to the agencies, and I just need you to understand if there is some sort of negative impact that they could have, maybe due to your ability of not transferring funds at the appropriate time. Talking to your slide 6, the challenges during the first 6 months, and where we where you spoke about the delay in invoices and vouchers. These vouchers, are you going to be able to file them within this financial year, or what are those challenges? Because just need you to understand what your audit, your financial audit implications will be without, because that will be seen as expenditure, maybe fruitless or wasteful if without vouchers being handed in. Just need to understand that implication. Thank you.
Sorry, I haven't seen you. I apologize.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question in slide 12, the way forward. I just would like to know actually what is the status of the proposed oil refinery at Kuha.
Okay, issue. I would just like to take up one of the small issues that was raised here in respect of slide 12. But when I remember when we had earlier done the annual report some time ago, there had been a reference to the same Centurion Aerospace Village, if you recall. And it had indicated there, I think, about what I call the SWIP, funding, etc. Part of that had a European Union aspect to it, from my understanding at the time, and I wonder if we could get some sort of clarification, because it does appear as if some of the construction processes could not be launched, and it would appear as if that is the same as the Centurion Aerospace Village that you were referring to. So if we could get some clarification in that particular respect there. Is that the Centurion, slide 12, yeah. It's really just a clarification on that particular one. The other one was the comparison. I see you did actually, well, this one is the same slide 7, the transfer payment. And there's a reference here to incentives, plus 62% there. I know you may have made some passing reference. I wonder, because incentives have often come up, if you could just expand upon that particular one on the incentives area in that regard. And then the other one was in the area of... Well, not so much. We've tackled the compensation to employees and so on and so forth. But there was a reference here on the economic contraction and the, I think it was in slide 11 or 12, I'm just looking up. Yeah, economic contraction or other changes in general economic conditions could adversely affect other factors relevant to DTI's performance, that particular one. What were you actually looking at in that regard? Over to yourself, Minister, now, by the sound.
This time I've been asked the DG to start, and I'll have a few things at the end.
I think they fixed it. Have they fixed it? Can you hear me? I need to be close to the CFO next to me here. I'll deal with some of the questions, and then I'll ask my colleague to ask. And I'll also try and combine some of these questions, because I think, in general terms, all of the questions have to do with, all of the majority of the questions seem to be talking to the sectors that explain the under expenditure in respect of incentives. GUHA, as it turns out, I think falls in that category as well in regard to the number of projected investments relative to the actual investments, as it were. And if I stay with GUHA for a little while, the reason why we're doing this adjustment for GUHA is because we now are talking specific projects, specific investors who are locating the GUHA. The thing with these IDZ and the GUHA especially is because of the chicken and egg situation. The less you put off the infrastructure required to attract investors, the less the investors show interest, as it were. And the less the Treasury has an appetite to fund. That has been the kind of funding lockjam around GUHA especially. The same would apply to other IDZs, but GUHA especially. But what we're seeing is that where we can demonstrate that here is an interest, here are investors who are contracted, and as we speak, there are three investors who are contracted, they need infrastructure. So this money would be to actually leverage that investment. That is the general thing. Of course, the outcomes to date are far below the projection. Now, that is the question that was the first question that has been asked. You know, they are far below projections. But we think this will improve. I think as the general economic condition improves. Perhaps the same with the GUHA, I must refer to project in Mtombo. Our understanding is that that project is still in the decision-making processes. There's no finality as to whether it will go ahead, as it were. We read, like everybody else, that the Department of Energy and the Minister of Energy is very supportive of that project. Now, to the extent that there are industrial development spin-offs to that project. That's a research project, a small research project that we're doing to leverage that investment. That speaks to the question around Mtombo. I'm not sure where the final decisions as to the go-ahead for the project are going to be made. I'm not aware that as far as that is concerned. How we recover from the film, and generally how we recover from the under expenditure in respect to those incentives which are affected by the general economic environment, is going to depend on how confidence levels in the manufacturing sector, especially because many of these investments, you know, apart from foods, services, and BPOs, they target manufacturing. And so, to the extent that there is a turnaround in the sentiment of manufacturers, we can expect that that will be reflected in the numbers. Whether it's achievable within the remainder of the financial year up to March is a moot point. But it is clear that we have to be talking our economy up, and we know that the greatest challenge is the value of the currency. This is a topical issue. Yesterday, Minister and I, I'm sure Minister would say this as it is last week, we met with manufacturers who account for nearly 80 to 90% of manufacturing, all of them saying that the exchange rate is a challenge and that in fact they are in a crisis, that we are facing a short-term crisis. And I think that is in policy terms, as government, that's what we need to be responding to. It's clear that without government making the appropriate signals, the economy as a whole, but manufacturing in particular, is not going to come out of the depressed conditions in which energy is. So we've got to be talking the economy up and deploying credible incentives, such as the one that we launched yesterday, you know, the tax incentive, and the incentives that we have on our in our portfolio. We have effected savings of our own. We have asked for moderation with regard to, for example, traveling, reducing the number of delegations, traveling economy as far as possible, cutting down on advertisements and promotional activities and that type of thing. So the non-essential expenses we have targeted for savings, and we have actually scored some savings in regard to that, which has allowed us to do the adjustment. There is a question around tooling. The interesting thing about the tooling initiative is that this is a project that's been coming a long while back, initially funded by donor funding, EU funding, but with adjustments, we're beginning to get into the budget, the first budget of the department, supported by, interestingly, Treasury, because when we went to launch Treasury, we were very impressed with what we're doing there. And they actually, you know, said that why don't you look for all of us to support this thing, something really good. Through this initiative, supporting the supplier capacity. This is a supply capacity for the manufacturing sector, focusing in the metal industry, as it were. I'm hoping, I think the question is, you know, do we hope to train all of those numbers? I'll say yes. I think it's very possible, you know, for us to reach those targets in regard to the number of students trained. The feeling of posts, this is an area where from a few years ago, we have begun to encourage diligence. And it was through that diligence that's been encouraging that we've been able to reduce the vacancy rate, cutting turnaround times, ensuring that we target high priority vacancies and so on. And so we're pretty confident that in terms of the level of diligence in filling the process, we will continue. Whether at the end of the day we are able to reduce the vacancy rate and therefore the under expenditure of this item, I can't be certain, sure, but I can only assure the House that improving the capacity of the department recruiting strategically, we are maintaining the highest level of diligence. I'm going to ask my colleagues to explain how the arrangement with the Department of International Relations and ourselves work with regard to expenditure that we incur abroad. And maybe, you know, my colleagues will assist with regard to prospects in regard to the St. Children Iris Space Village, but I know that it's a project that has been in the making for a while, and that these are funds which, if they were to be received, would enable the plans to proceed, because what was increasingly constraining progress with regard to that facility was available to the budget, because this was another area that we started funding with donor funds, and it's only now moving on to the fiscal, as it were. So I'm confident that this money will be expended, because the plans are there, they've just not had the money. So as soon as the money is available, I think that will continue. But my colleagues can fill in the detail, as it were. I think I've dealt with most of the questions. I'm going to see if maybe there might be. Okay, the minister. Maybe we ask the minister first, and then my colleagues will supplement the responses I've given.
All right, let me just say a few things. The National Tulin Initiative, I think when you see the report on the IPAP, you'll see that is one of the projects which we put in an orange, which means it's not progressing as fast as it should do. I think that we think that this is a very critical program, actually. I think for every reason the DG said, it depends on cooperation and partnerships with private sector companies, and I think with the state of the economy, that has been a little bit slow. But that's the point there. But I think that in terms of the overall performance of metals-related industries, the Tulin Initiative is quite fundamental. So that's the point there. On the film incentive, I think we should just say that in addition to the World Cup, which I think was mentioned, it is the fact of the matter is that during the recession, the overall number of productions worldwide fell quite dramatically. I don't have the figures with me, but I saw them once. And then the number of productions that came to South Africa also went down. And now we face the challenge of actually the value of the currency, as the DG said, is a factor. And when we give you the report, we'll indicate a number of sectors which are affected. That is one of them, where the value of the currency is an issue now. On the compensation of employees and savings, I think we should just point out that in the budget, as part of the overall tightening of belt, if you want to call it that, only part of the additional salary wage increases are given on to departments. In fact, departments have to find a proportion themselves, like their own savings. So that's one of the ways that we're forced to do this. I think that we should just try to help Mr. Small, I think, understand what that table on page 7 is saying. I think that table is basically saying that a huge part of the budget of the DTI involves, as we've said several times before, transfers of incentives and agencies and IBZs and whatever. So we take a lot of the budget money that we get goes to these in the form of offerings, incentives, support programs to business. And all that table is really telling us is that between July and October, the pace of that picked up. That's basically all it's saying. It's trying to tell us that the picture we saw in July was a fairly slow movement, then it's picked up. And then I did a little calculation, and actually I said to the DG there, if we were expending at the same rate as we spent on average up to October until the rest of the financial year, and you added those items in the table where he said there are particular big expenditure items coming through, we will more or less have spent our budget. That's the broad picture. And that's the broad picture. So I think that's where we are on that. I think he covered Kucha. I mean, let's not hide the fact that there are some fairly big challenges around these IDZs. I think that some of the assumptions that underlay the IDZs in the past proved not to be real. You know, assumptions of what kind of tenants were going to come in and what, you know, anchor tenants and all that in Kucha will. Well, the assumption was it was going to be an aluminium smelter, not compatible with the energy situation in the country and so on and so forth. But there's a big bit of infrastructure down there. I think it's our job to make that infrastructure work. Not easy. Maybe the oil refinery will come in. Maybe it won't. But we still have to work with that IDZ. And I think that the firms that have gone there, like this one that's this frozen fruit juice that we also they find the facilities there quite useful. So I think we need to just see it like that. On the question of the aerospace village and SWEEP, I think we should just say what SWEEP is. SWEEP was sector-wide enterprise and employment program. It was a fund from the European Union, which supported some projects that the DTI has done. Now that SWEEP has now ended, and it's been replaced by another program, which is a broader program around enterprise, employment, whatever. And it's not just DTI, by the way. It would be a whole host of activities in the cluster. But that SWEEP program supported the Centurion Aerospace Village initially. And I think what's projected here is now we need to start funding it ourselves. That's the point. So that was the issue there, I think. And then the economic contraction and performance. I mean, I think this is, the DG's partly covered it, but we said, you know, we're pushing up against the hill, and then we've got this force of the currency, and the currency issue is an international issue and all sorts of things. I mean, everybody knows this currency war thing is real serious business. But that's where we find ourselves. So, you know, we launch all these incentives because we have a sense and a confidence that eventually we'll solve the currency matter. But right now, it is a huge millstone around every investor's neck. So we try to keep the programs going. But the uptake in this climate of a lot of the incentives is not where it should be. I think that's the reality we have to describe to you in absolute frankness. The exception, and the one where I think there's been good success, has been the automotive program. The automotive program, I think, was indicated here. It was slow off the track because, well, we did what I suppose we were expected to do. We consulted considerably with the automotive industry. There were a number of meetings where we discussed the details of the program. We tried to customize it to meet various needs, but also insisting on the kind of milestones that we wanted. So there was quite a lot of work that took place around the AIS before the AIS was actually in place. And then when the AIS is in place, then I think the uptake has been quite good, and I think the performance has been quite good. And there's quite a number of projects still in the pipeline. So that's what I would add. And then, DG, any of the colleagues who want to go into further detail?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the cost-cutting initiatives as well, we've also looked at a number of the DTI's operating costs, and we have a governance body that also has been monitoring that, looking at telephone costs and seeing how we can reduce that as well. In terms of the agencies, all our agencies, they are contractual arrangements in place, either shareholders' compacts or MOUs, and these get renewed on an annual basis. All of those are in place, and those each would determine and dictate the payment disbursements or the transfers, either on a monthly basis or on a quarterly basis. I think there's only one area that we are aware of where there's, in terms of the MOU, that we haven't finalized as yet. But largely all of those are on track. The CFO may want to comment on it a bit further. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I will be commenting around the brochures from DECO. First of all, I must mention that previously we used to have serious challenges in terms of us receiving vouchers timely, and as we can see from the information that we presented today, we have seen, you know, a better picture compared to previously, because we used to wait for about 4 months to get, you know, the vouchers through to the department. But what we have done as DTA, we have entered into an MOU with DECO. What we basically do is that we issue them with an advance in terms of, you know, the specific claim. And as and when the vouchers are sent through to us, we just perform a reconciliation and we pay based on that. The other reason why we need to you know, to advance money through to DECO is due to the fact that, remember, they also work on their own cash flow projection. So if we don't inject money through, then they will also have challenges along the way. But the picture is looking much more better for now. But what I can indicate is the fact that, remember, the other challenge that they will be faced with is if we are now faced with the financial year, and what will happen is that they also need to start with their financial year end process, and hence you will see that between April till around July, nothing will come through because the focus will have shifted to other areas. So that's what we have actually captured here. And for the period under review, the match account was only received sometime in July because the DECO was also, you know, undergoing an audit as well as, you know, the financial end process. But I can say, you know, from our side, the MOU is actually helping, because what we also do, we do engage with the DECO, like on a monthly basis, where we will send them reconciliations from our side for them to confirm whether they agree with the figures. And as you all know, that in instances where, you know, they are having money with them on their side, what will happen is, let's say if we are requested to submit maybe interim financial statements to Treasury, what will happen is they need to reflect the other leg of the transaction, and DTI will reflect the other leg. So in a way, there's a way of coming back, you know, to doing the actual reconciliation. Thanks.
Looking at the questions that were asked and so on, certainly the cost side of issues, currency issues, CUCA, and compensation dealt with there. The two-thirds of the adjustments on 338, that particular one I'm just checking here, so this was one of the questions that came up. I think just to see if it was answered here. And the other one, the enterprise one, yes. Certainly it would appear as if, broadly speaking, these questions were answered. But are there follow-ups, please? Honourable Harris? Pardon? Yes, new questions. When I say that, just pursuing and keeping in mind, we're also looking at the way forward, as it were, in this regard. And we may also tackle that side. So the Honourable Harris, Honourable Hadebe, I'm not sure if that's, yes, Honourable September, I'm having a good look around. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just a question of clarity to make sure I'm getting this right. You referred now to the amount of $29.4 million for the tooling initiative. To clarify, if that was rolled over, that means, am I correct in saying that's from the tooling initiative budget last year, or is it a rollover, a general rollover?
General rollover based on savings that were identified.
Savings in this department or
in this department?
I don't think it's such a good idea to have dialogue. Perhaps you could exhaust the question first, Honourable Harris, and then let's see if our department responds.
Can I pass on to a colleague and just try and clarify my question?
All right.
Thank you, Chairperson. What is actually came as a relief to me is the undertaking that the budget will be spent, all of it, with the rate at which they have projected the things, which is good for our report. Now, but the question going forward, I think, because this report must also help us as we go forward into the future. Yeah, I want to make an example, Chairperson. When we went to the WTO, we compared the strength of our international mission compared to our IPSA partners. We found that we were far, far below capacity. And then we know very well that this Department of Trade and Industry is one department which was identified as the department was also deal with the decent, with the creation of decent work or jobs. So in moving forward, what is the strategy of increasing the capacity in those things? Because when you speak about those international organizations, I can make an example here. You know, those guys from Brazil, they indicated that one of the things to make them to have so much influence in those organizations is that they flood these institutions with the people from their home country, so that over a period of time, the guys who are in top management are coming from those countries, so that the agenda of those countries are being pushed. So what is it which the department is going to do to ensure that we really have that presence? Because I think that Africa as a whole is dependent upon us as South Africa. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sadebe. Honorable September.
Thank you, Chair, and apologies that I came in a bit late. My question is around the following. I heard earlier on, I think it was, is it the COO? That she was talking about, you know, the sort of areas where you're cutting down and so on. Of course, Chair, we would welcome, you know, the realistic departments, making sure that they are realistic within the current economic situation that we are in. I would want to know, it's one thing cutting down, but it's another thing if you cut down, are that money being shifted elsewhere? Because there's a budget of X amount. And I think one would be interested to find out, are you putting it into more productive areas? Not that the ones that you cut down was unproductive. That's the first one. But just generally speaking, is there a detailed analysis that speaks to the department saying themselves, look, these areas, in any event, we should have a continuous approach of, you know, our expenditure levels should not be X in the following areas, and it has been wasteful in any event, or you have a target that says that we would really like to cut down and rearrange our expenditure in all these following areas in general. So that's the first one that I would want to know. The second one is, Chair, I know the Minister said in the last meeting also, these exercises are not about them coming to negotiate with us for more money, and the principle I accept. But what I would like to know is, I think the committee must have a view that says that if we realistically look at all the line items and the department's budget overall, are we going to achieve our objectives that we are setting out for the 5 years? And if those objectives that we are setting out for the 5 years have got various challenges, whether they are human resources, but of course more so if they are financial, then I think it is a worthwhile conversation, because it is not a negotiation. And I think those kind of things the committee must seize itself with, because our interest must be the bigger picture of what we would want to achieve year on year. And if these budgets fall short of our major objectives, then I think it's a good case for us to be made to say that in our report the following was what we would like to have. So I think, Chair, I want to say to the department that be assured we're not asking for a negotiation session, but we want a frank analysis also that gives us an indication of, you know, are we on course or not. And if we're not on course, then that's the interest. We're not going to give you more money for flying from Fiji, but if you want more money for flying because it means that you're going to, you know, achieve the following, then of course, you know, those kind of things we would want to. Just on the side, Chief, as I think the Minister mentioned it, what effect does this Obama printing money have and going to have? I must say that one financial decision that he's taken since he has taken office, because all of us are suffering because of his uncreative... Can we leave it there?
Yeah, right. Not that we're entering into the field of foreign policy just at the moment, but yes. Honourable Harris, did you say you wanted to just come back there? No.
I've clarified my question, Chair. The question is, what is the source of the 29.4 million that was rolled over for Thule? And then, Chair, I did have another follow-up. I'm not sure if I may have missed it, and if I did, I apologize. But the within Program 6, we shifted 400 million rand away from automotive and other incentives and into the IDZ. Now, that's a serious proportion of the of Program 6's entire budget. And it seemed to me by the presentation that all happened in quarter two in a relatively short space of time. My question, which I initially posed, was what did we spend that on in the IDZ? So did they have the capacity to spend the extra half billion rand? And where did that money go? Thank you.
Thank you. I do have one or two questions of my own. I know that during our recent study tour and oversight visit to the Eastern Cape, we visited Kucha, as you are aware. And yes, indeed, very exciting, some of the industries they had attracted already and so on. Of course, we agree with you about the constraints involving investment. You've got to, you know, put money in to get money and attract more investment. But one of the issues which did alarm us at the time and which we hoped would be addressed going forward was the issue of the status, as it were, let me put it that way, broadly speaking, of Kucha, especially in relation to its funding arrangements. And it would have been useful to know, now that we also have the empty BPS in front of us, where are we going forward, you know, what sort of progress has been made, because we are aware that there are a number of challenges in this regard. The other point is that certainly this committee has taken a position on the currency, as you know itself, in respect of manufacturing and industrialization. But I think, Minister, you would agree, and DG and Deputy Minister, that while we totally, and I think all of us agree that currency plays a very big and real role, the other issue is that even if this was all right, even if this we'd addressed that issue, we'd still be facing high transport costs. We'd still be facing issues such as high communication, which indirectly, yes, are related to currency, but really are at the bottom line related to the very lack of such infrastructure where it is most needed as such. The other area as well is the role of markets, etc. We, as you know, are totally committed to regional integration in every respect here and are fighting for that support and so on. And it's become quite clear that we need to look at this whole thing about southern or African continental trade and how South Africa can benefit. And again, one is in, it's often brought to mind that transport, not simply currency, other issues are act as inhibiting factors, to say the least, in this regard. And then linked to that, I know, Minister, you have often pointed to the importance of labour absorption and employment and so on in this regard. And skills. I think Honourable September made some kind of reference here. Where is it? Where are these weaknesses or vulnerabilities in respect of capacity that perhaps could be addressed? Capacity relating either to liquidity, financial or human resource, equipment and the like. Now, on the skills side, clearly this is not your specialised area, but it's become apparent that this is an important area where that is related to manufacturing and industry. How do we ensure that we can not simply retain and build and sustain? How do we put this together so that while currency remains a real issue, we don't allow the manufacturing to decline and we don't lose a grip on the industrial development, as it were, notwithstanding the huge challenges we face in respect of currency? And I wondered, although we're not finance, but we have a relationship there with the G20, is there anything, one would hope, having moving to Seoul, etc., and I mean, I'm saying this facetiously, but I would hope that somehow there's a Seoul in those going to Seoul so that we can address the currency issues.
The question around representation abroad is a very important issue. We are, in fact, in the process of reviewing our representation abroad in line with our strategy that says that we will prioritize high growth, dynamic, fast growing markets in the south. And let me give you an example. Given the size of China, the potential of China, it just doesn't help to have one person in Beijing and one person in Shanghai. Barely, you know, scratch the surface, as it were. So part of that is to say, can we afford to scale down our presence in markets that are not so dynamic, and you know, largely Europe and North America, we don't see the possibility that they can support growth of our exports, and so we need to refocus our presence and our footprint in that sense. And I think your question was on Africa is clearly the place to be, and we want to make a good big push. We've opened new offices, as I said, in when we were here last week in our annual report. We reported in the new offices that we've opened in Africa to expand our presence there. And the WTO is also correct, because the WTO is not just about Doha, the negotiation, but it's also about the ongoing work in Geneva, the committees that are discussing all kinds of things, which if you don't follow properly, you could be landed with outcomes that are damaging to your economy. So we want to move in that direction. And in fact, just in terms of resourcing, I might as well indicate that we have put in a current MTF process an additional request of five billion rand. And so partly to answer Honourable September, if we were to get that, we should be able to step up our activities in a number of areas. So we await anxiously to see how much of that additional request we put in to the Treasury will be supported. I think there's linked with that will clearly be much sharper focusing on priorities. We need to consolidate our work to focus on the things that will give us greatest returns. And so, if I think about it, if we conclude the program around reform, law reform, the current program on law reform, companies, consumer competition, then the next big area really that we must put all our energies into is in industrial development and enterprise development, which includes cooperatives, export and investment promotion. I see the priorities of our work in that sort of cluster of areas, because they can more directly support job creation and inclusive growth, which is the priority of government presently. We are serious about savings. Savings is not an event, it's a culture. And so, for example, we have a facility that we're trying to say to people, don't go into hotels and so on, use the facility that we have. So the capacity utilization in regard to the facilities that we have on campus is at a high level. All of the meeting rooms are being utilized, and we don't approve going outside unless it's absolutely necessary. Things like centralized printing, you know, instead of every unit around the corner having their own printers, whatever, we now have one big facility that can be used by. So I have the detail here that shows the results of all of this which we've been doing, you know, at least over the last 12 months. We are persuaded, by the way, we're very closely with the Kuha. I also went there, Chair, around the time that you were there. We are convinced that this allocation will be put to good use, because as I said, the projects, some of them are already rolling on, and if they were not to get this allocation, they would be in a pretty bad shape, and in terms of confidence of investors, they would take a huge dent in confidence. So these are tied. These are not speculative. Say, let's use them and see what they're able to pull off. This is going to go straight into. In fact, they started to use some of their money, but it's not going to go all the way. So this is really urgent sort of support that they need, and they do have the capacity. In fact, to the extent that they have not been getting the full funding they are requiring, some of their capacity they are giving to the provincial government. They are helping with the building of schools and clinics for the provincial government, because they have that sort of additional capacity. The Eastern Cape Development Corporation. I'm going to let my colleague Pepsi do the question on the tooling and initiative further. But let me, one thing with Kuka, Chair, say that yes, the current model, funding model, is unsustainable. We can't every year be going to the treasury and being turned down. Every year going there and being turned down. So we started a conversation with the treasury, and they're very supportive of us leveraging more development finance through the DBSA and the IDC, which can borrow Kuha, and perhaps in the medium to long term also bringing private sector capital into this project, because elsewhere there are models elsewhere where these things are run by private sector. We started off with a model that says the state must come in. In fact, even those that are run by the private sector, they don't get started by the private sector. The state does them, because it's the kind of infrastructure which the private sector would not on its own put in place. But once you start to put in place and you can show viability in terms of revenues and so on, I think it's possible to attract private sector money into these. So that's work which we're doing. You know, hopefully which will conclude in due course. I think I'll leave the Minister, maybe you can deal with the Chair's question around the currency and trade in Africa. But maybe before you do that, let me ask my colleagues to clarify their thing about the tooling initiative.
Thank you, Eugene. If I can start off at the end of the previous financial year, we had the DTI had a surplus of more than 150 million rand. We could have used the funds for incentives, but because we could not expedite more than 8%, we had to stay within the 8% of taking funds from a budget. Or else in the previous year we could have used it to support some of our incentives who were in need of funds. So we had this, and this amount was located in goods and services and compensation of employees. During the start of the following financial year, we picked up another problem that the Centurion, the National Tooling Initiative, which was then funded by SWEET, they have actually depleted the funding, and from the offset it was supposed to be between 1, 2, and 3 training centers. But as a result of the other stakeholders needing more people to be trained in that area, it was actually envisaged that they would have 7 training centers. But to actually start a process by taking up the students, they had to secure funding. And we met with the National Treasury because it was already after the MTF and the E&E was already finalized and tabled in February. So the National Treasury agreed that we could use the funding or the surplus that was in the previous financial year, although the rollover actually said you're not allowed to either to roll over funds from, can only roll over funds to the same objective. They allowed us in this case to roll over the funding because this was a need and students would have not been able to participate in that year. And if it did happen that they could not be funded for that specific year, then the syllabus would have been taken away another year four. And that was the reason why the National Treasury actually approved that the funds could be rolled over for the national tooling.
Okay, let me just come in on the broader question that was raised by Honourable September. Let me just say that I think we tried to, I said earlier on, I gave a figure to have it to be checked, but I made this calculation, as I said, that if we take what we spent up to October, we spent at the same rate until the end of the financial year, and when we added the items in that last slide, we broadly speaking would have spent our budget. That's the picture we want to say, and we will be more or less delivering the same kind of result as the graph showed. I think the point is that if we were not to do that, you know, the uptake of the incentives was for reasons to do with the state of the economy is less. I think it would be a very serious mistake for us to then be, and I think this is where the committee can come in, for people to turn around and say, you can't spend your money, we won't give you any more. I think that kind of conclusion, which might be something that some people might want to jump to, I think would be a serious mistake. Because I think what we need to do is we need to look carefully and analyze some of the reasons that might underlie some of those things. Because I think that in many cases, I think we have a fairly productive relationship with Treasury on some of the things that we've got. For example, the automotive program. We got money for that. We got money for the clothing one. We've got this Section 12I incentive scheme that was launched yesterday. We've got those things moving along. And I think the basic, if we can keep up that sort of rhythm where we actually design a good and decent program, we get the resources for it, I think that's what we need to do. Because in the areas particularly of industrial policy, enterprise development and so on, I think what we need to ensure is that we have properly resourced programs. I mean, having said that, then I think we have to be ready to make some choices as a country. Because the basic response, as you heard the Minister of Finance say, to the currency issue is loosening monetary policy, tightening fiscal policy. Now there's going to be some choices. And I think that some of the debates are going to be where do economic services lie and economic development lie. And I think that we would want to argue in the economic cluster that they have to command a high priority in the allocation of resources. And so that's not to say everything the DTI does is in that category. There are plenty of things that we can save money. We try to save money. Many less adverts, many less hotel bookings for, you know, we have a meeting sometimes. Sometimes I get invited to them with other departments and you go to some hotel somewhere. We don't do it. You come to the campus. So that's how we try to act. So I think that a property resource program is what we need, and I think it's important that this committee plays a role, looks at that, and so on. Having said that, I think we just need to go back to the IPAF and look again. What did we say? We didn't say that the biggest source of funding for industrial development needs to come from other developing countries, whatever, from on-budget incentives. It doesn't. It comes from Industrial Development Corporation type funding on a larger scale, cheaper money. That's where it really comes, DFI funding. So I think that in the sort of the resources that we need to have to support industrial development, productive sector activity, absolutely fundamental, the state plays a role. Yes, it's a combination of on and off budget, and both need to be properly resourced, but the biggest quantum needs to come from DFI funding. That's what the IPAP is telling us. I think that's what I would say on that. I think that just to add on the question of the WTO mission I think at some stage you need to find a way, but it might raise a few questions because we don't want to start saying this country is a priority and then somebody else we meet is by implication not. But we have a sense of, as the DG was saying, where are the opportunities for trading in and investment promotion, and that's where the TTI is going to place its foreign economic officers or foreign economic representatives. So it doesn't necessarily mean because, you know, place X, we used to have one. Next year we'll have one again when the term of office of the current incumbent is over. We may want to shift them around. The other thing I think that's very important is that we have a much closer working relationship with DERCO on this matter now, International Relations Corporation, because all embassies around the world, everybody around the world, is supposed to do trade and investment promotion. This is called economic diplomacy in DERCO. So we want to try to work together with DERCO so that we enhance the general capacity of our ordinary diplomats, if you want to call them that, to do this kind of work. And in my little experience, I think some of them do it excellently. Others haven't got a clue. I mean, it's a big dispersal of different capacities and different ways. And I think we identify the good practice and so on. And in some cases, I can't preempt any announcements, but there's going to be one of our people who's going to be appointed an ambassador under DERCO because they recognize that in a particular place they need someone with a particular capacity and somebody's going there as the ordinary ambassador. So that's the sort of way we're trying to work. And then the other side of it is that we agreed with them that our representative in Geneva is a full ambassador now. It was a ridiculous situation. For ages he wasn't. And it was costing us because in the WTO there's a certain hierarchy and all that kind of stuff. And he was just able to get by on his own personal merits, but which are significant. But it was a problem, and now I think we sorted that out. Yes, we're trying to add to the staff of that mission. I think the problems are not budgetary. There's a whole lot of other things in terms of the speed of doing this, but I think we're well aware of the fact that that office needs beefing up. There's a certain country next door to us which, before it underwent a little bit of a decline, used to have a much bigger mission there in Geneva, much bigger mission. So we're not even talking the Brazils or whatever. We're talking even smaller countries than us. What the DG didn't say, but which is quite important, is the way the WTO works is if you're deemed to have agreed unless you disagreed. So you don't put you to meeting, you don't say we don't agree, you're deemed to have agreed. That's the way it works. So if you can't cover all the bases, then you're going to lose out. And as he says, it's not just the Doha round, although there's things happening on the Doha round. It's not, even though we don't appear to be, I think the congressional elections from what I'm interpreting are not likely to lead in the near future to an early conclusion. There's a lot of work that's going on around some of these issues which may seem to be the secondary issues, fisheries subsidies, anti-dumping rules and stuff like that. A lot of work going on, so we have to cover to cover those bases. So I think that on the budget in general, I think it's important to keep watching this thing. And you know, here and there you'll find that there are some programs where even now, if we had more money, we could do more. Sometimes the issue is not money. Sometimes the issue is something else. And if you threw more money at it, it wouldn't necessarily make a difference. And I think we need to just interrogate those things much more closely and try to move ourselves ahead, but bearing in mind everything else that we've been saying about, if we keep economic development well-resourced, which I think it ought to be, and that's part of our priorities, then something else is going to have to take a tighten more than us. I mean, we're going to have to set these priorities. I think that's what the Minister of Finance was telling us. Let me just then, okay, you asked Obama printing money, I think you put it that way. Some people call this thing quantitative easing. I mean, what we've seen essentially is that, as I tried to explain it before last time when we were here with the annual report, is as I understand it like this, that these developed countries that were fired all their fiscal bullets. They've spent all the money that they can get out of Congress and they have huge debt and all that kind of stuff. And it still hasn't got them out of the recession. That's fundamentally it. So what they're doing now is they've dropped their interest rates to practically nothing, and they're now pumping in money into the system in the hope that money will now be cheap and available and invested in productive activity in the United States and elsewhere. It's actually not going there. It's money which is now looking for a quick return. They're not looking to invest in productive activity in the United States or elsewhere. They're looking for a quick return, and they're going to places, and they're going into basically looking for paper, government bonds and all sorts of other things and other kinds of short-term paper, as well as equities, buy and sell equities. And you're going into places where the interest rates are higher, and those happen to be the areas of the world where there's also a bit of growth, so they're going into the so-called advanced developing countries. That's when we have to be one of them. That's what is happening. We've got this hot money coming in. Now, the reason the finance minister made all those remarks he made about this last round is that the very same people who are doing this are also saying we now need to have global responsibility. We mustn't have a currency war, we mustn't get into protectionism, blah blah blah, we must go and sort this all out in the G20. Well, a couple of days before the G20 they just found another wadi, and that's what's happening. So I think that's the context we find ourselves in, and now we find the rand is still on a course of appreciation. It's not even just stayed where it is. I mean, I heard this morning some economists say that it's going to test six to the dollar. Now, six to the dollar, if we start ending up in the five something to the dollar, we are in serious trouble. I think that, we just need to be aware of that. The DG mentioned. I think there are probably people in manufacturing as well as other industries in this country who can only survive if they have an ultra competitive exchange rate, and they don't address some of the issues that the chair was talking about, competitiveness, productivity, things like that. But when the currency is so overvalued, so significantly overvalued, then you're starting to cut into people whose productivity and everything else is actually quite reasonable, and the playing field is just becoming very, very, very difficult. So I think that's the situation that I think we find ourselves in. So it's not that these other issues. And you mentioned transport and communications in Africa. That's a very fundamental issue in Africa. It's the basis on which we it underpins our approach to what we call development integration on the African continent. So it was fairly interesting. I went to a discussion with the AU trade ministers, and even Pascal Lamy was talking about how we shouldn't just try to imitate the EU. And just follow sequentially what the EU had in terms of its formal arrangement. So you move from free trade area, customs union, monetary union, blah blah blah. You just imitate them. They had very specific conditions in place in Europe. Among other things, the most important things, they were a bunch of developed countries with industrial capabilities. When we talk Africa, we're not talking that at this point in time. So I think that we say, and we look at our own experience, the biggest challenges in Africa, very often we find that once we've opened up, we've given tariff concessions and so on. Look at SADC. In 2005 already, SACU, South Africa mainly, we opened up to 98%+ of products from the rest of the region duty-free since then. Look at the pattern of trade. It's not much different to what it's always been. And the reason is not because there's tariffs in place, because there aren't. It's because the ability, the real economy capacities enabling countries to produce goods that are going to compete in the South African market is limited. And then secondly, what you say, transport infrastructure, things like that. I can't remember, I went to Uganda and they were telling us how long it takes to get something from Uganda to South Africa, to go down to Mombasa, then come on a boat, and I don't know what. You know, it's all of these things are real constraints. So we actually say that there has to be cooperation around infrastructure development, cooperation around identifying some value chains in the productive economy that we can work to develop, and then, you know, when those things are in place, then we can start talking about customs unions and whatever. So I think that's the response I would give to that. But I think that the budget issue and what we hear today, I mean, that's the message I would give, is I think that the real economy programs need to be properly financed, and I think you need to be asking us how we design these things, what results they're getting. I gave you a highlight the other day. I think the motor program, the automotive incentive scheme, has begun to yield some of the results people wanted, and then we get some quid pro quo at the other end. We've said we're going to give these things much more conditionally from now onwards. So not everyone and his dog who puts up any old silly scheme is going to get the new tax incentive. It's going to be those that go along with the industrial development objectives, reduce energy use, increase employment. They're the ones who will get the big bucks out of this, and others will get much less. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Minister. It will certainly look as if the team has also concluded their responses. I'm just looking at the DG as well. And from our side, I'm looking at the committee. We certainly seem to have concluded at this particular point. I think, Minister, as we said earlier, this is certainly not the way we would want to do things next year. I think utilising this opportunity to just embark upon the Brewer sort of process. I'm sure, of course, it's been cold, but it's got a mainland budget review, recommendations, report, something along those lines. And it's actually not an event. It's a process which we're putting in place. And given the greater familiarity with what is going on, and perhaps we ought to be more cognizant of the fact that the separation of some of the entities into economic development, this has now taken place. There's been a consolidation of certain issues. That as we move into the 2011-2012 process of a three-year medium-term budget policy statement and its implementation, we're able, I think, to utilize all of the instruments, even the regular engagements we have with you itself, as well, of course, as the oversight and other measures that we have. So certainly from our side, we would like to thank you for working with us in this manner. There are so many other areas we would have loved to have gone into, but we ourselves need to be better informed on some of these as a committee, and once we are next year, we believe we'll be able to do better justice and be more constructive ourselves in this regard to, in the end, our goals. We have common goals, and the common goal is indeed to transform for the lives of our people through, in this case, trade and industry, as it were. And no, we haven't forgotten the co-ops, and I know that you'll be coming back to that next year, the SMMEs, a number of issues like the gambling report, which the reality is we ran out of time to address everything in the, effectively. And I think this committee is, the last thing it wants to embark upon is an American tourist ticket trip to Europe, where, you know, you see 26 countries in 5 days or something. So we believe that we'd rather do something in-depth and add value to it, as it were. So I think that we are doing that. We ourselves will be looking towards, you know, not finalizing, but completing this phase of our, you know, investigations into steel, which is, again, one of the many areas that we hope to continue work on and will do work on in the new year. So we'd like to thank you for your engagement with us here today as the ministry, but also as the department itself. From, on behalf of the committee, thank you very much indeed. And members of the committee, I should just remind you that we had scheduled our meeting for 9 o'clock, as you know, in another venue. But because I believe arts and culture and science and technology would like to be with us tomorrow, the venue is not going to be large enough that had been identified for us. So we've had to move to S12A, which I understand is in the NCOP area. I said this to the committee secretary that my recollection there was that it was smaller than here. But he said that the venue we had been allocated as a single committee some time ago was smaller than that. But it could be that they do have a couple of straps from the ceiling from which colleagues can hang. Parliament's become very creative. The reality is we're not going to change the venue. There are no venues. So my suggestion is get there early so you actually get a seat. Get a seat. There are no tickets. They get a seat. The rest of you will sit from the, hang from the ceiling or outside. Now, 9 o'clock is when we had scheduled it, but unfortunately there is another meeting there earlier, so we can only start at 9:30. But that I don't think we should say 9:30. We should say 9 o'clock, so we do start at 9:30. I'm sure we all understand what I mean. And then if we can just look at the attendance, the committee secretary has reminded me that we should have just reviewed this, that the Honourable Mabasa had a relapse, medical relapse, and at home again. The Honourable Kotsi, I'm not sure what the apology is. Right. And then you know, we did have other members who came in and had to leave for other meetings. And the Honourable Labenia is on study leave. So that is the state of the attendance currently here. So the ISP have members on study leave, COPE has members on at other meetings, and the rest of us are here. So my appeal is it's our regular meeting. It's a Wednesday. It's a very important meeting, honourable members, and I would appeal for us to try and do our best to be there, those of us who can. Thank you. So I'm going to release you and adjourn the meeting until tomorrow at the new venue.
See you. See you.